This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello, and thanks very much for choosing to listen to this podcast. I'm Helen Needham. One of my most favourite things to do is to go for a dip in a river, loch, or sometimes the sea. For me, it's a total reset, a pleasurable and sometimes challenging way to wash away the day and become fully happy within myself. Callum McLean is a well-known advocate of outdoor swimming here in Scotland. He's made films about his adventures and now he's published a book called 1001 Outdoor Swimming Tips. I recently met up with him to have a chat and a swim at the Loch of Cluny near Blairgowrie in Perthshire, a beautiful calm loch tucked away in the hills and surrounded by trees. There's been a bit of a wild swimming craze in recent years, but it's a term I'm not totally comfortable with, I must admit. I'd rather just call it swimming outside. But what does Callum think?
So I used to get a bit annoyed by the term wild swimming. I don't use it myself anymore. I kind of used to use it a wee bit. But basically, I like swimming outdoors. So I like swimming in wild places. I like swimming in lidos. I like swimming in places, you know, that sometimes might have a lifeguard or something. To me, wild swimming means you're swimming somewhere like this where there's no lifeguard looking out for you, you're taking responsibility for yourself, there's nothing particularly man-made. So I understand the term, but I can see how some people almost see it as like a rebranding of what people have been doing for, you know, generations, hundreds of years, just swimming outdoors. Because in Scotland, a lot of rural places, you might not have access to a swimming pool, so you do just swim outdoors, wherever you are.
But let's agree to call it outdoor swimming,
yeah,
shall we?
Yeah.
This spot here seems to be a popular outdoor swimming spot. I've already spoken to some ladies, and I think somebody else might be arriving as well. Does that warm your heart?
It's good. I think back to like maybe 5 years ago, I think this big kind of increase in recent years, you'd go to a loch and say, I'd go for a swim, and there'd be hardly anyone else ever going for a swim, and people would, you know, think it was a bit weird, maybe. But particularly in the last few years, it's hard to go to somewhere, you know, that's a nice location, and not see someone swimming, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost more unusual to go somewhere and no one be swimming, in a way. I'm not surprised to see other people here. I think this is quite a popular location, to be fair. But right across Scotland, so many places you'll go to now, particularly maybe on a morning, on a weekend, and there'll be groups out swimming. I think it's brilliant. I think it's fantastic to see so many people doing it, enjoying it, whatever way they enjoy it. You know, some people want to just go for a short, gentle swim, what they might call a wild swim. Some people want to do a kind of maybe round the island and back, which you might consider open water swimming, or, you know, a bit more distance kind of thing. So I think it's brilliant because, one, it's very easy to do, and two, you know, you can do it in whatever way you want to do it.
Yeah, it's your personal choice. So how did you get into this then?
I can never really put my finger on it. So it's like probably about 10, 11, almost 12 years ago now that properly became a thing that I was really into and almost quite obsessed by it, really. For me, a lot of it comes down to the sort of adventurous side of it. So taking on challenging or unusual kind of swims. So I was in Hobart in Tasmania and I looked across a river. A lot of my family from Australia, so I was there for a while, and I looked across this river and I said to myself, could I swim across there? You know, I think I could. And I worked out how to do it, went about doing it, and swam across this river. I remember from that moment, the kind of buzz of it stuck with me. So I can kind of put it down to that swim there, but then I think a lot of it just became from, you know, going out in the hills in Scotland, and you'd pass a beautiful loch, you'd pass a river, and you think, oh, I want to go for a swim, so I would. And then it just more and more and more grew from there, from just taking a plunge to planning out journeys where you swim out to islands and lochs and swim longer distances and, yeah, take on some events too and things like that. The opportunity for adventure kind of often within Scotland that really gripped me, I think.
Yeah, I can totally get that because if you're out in the hills and you've done a big day,
yeah,
there's nothing better than putting yourself in some water.
Yeah, it's such a joyful thing and everyone on a nice sunny day feels like doing it. I think the difference is maybe when it comes to a day like this, maybe getting yourself into the water when it's a bit of a breeze blowing, it's a bit grey.
Yeah.
But once you get hooked onto it, you almost have like a paradigm shift of what you think is maybe acceptable or what you would consider as being, oh yeah, I want to go swimming today. So on a day like this, yeah, I just want to go in. Whereas someone who's maybe not quite there yet would consider this to be a bit maybe bleak. But yeah, you get a shift in what you how you look at water almost, I think. So anywhere you go driving in Scotland now, I see a loch, I see a river, I'm thinking, oh yeah, could it be swum? You know, is there a possibility to even just get in for 5 minutes or, you know, go for a swim there? I'll often plan journeys so it includes a swim. Or like if I'm driving along the A9, I used to drive quite a lot between Inverness and Glasgow, so I know in my head where's a good swim spot within 5 minutes, within 20 minutes off the road. Sometimes, say you've got a partner who's like, you know, you're out and about with quite a lot, sometimes they've got to be a bit more patient, I think, if they're not into swimming.
Do they get used to sitting on the sides of lochs?
Yeah, I think so. They get very good at helping you get changed, you know, when you're a bit cold, which is actually a really useful thing.
Yeah.
You know, having someone with you, maybe when your hands are a bit cold and you know, when it's windy, you need to get yourself dried and quickly. So yeah, but you do also, you get to see some amazing places in Scotland just sitting beside the water. So even if you're not a swimmer, you can get to see some really cool places.
Well, you've written a book, which is soon to be published, all about it. And you start off basically setting out the reasons why people should do it.
Yeah.
So why should people try swimming outdoors?
Well, I think actually a lot of it is that kind of shift in thinking you get. So I don't want to tell people, you know, you should swim to become a long-distance swimmer. You should swim, you know, just for the kind of sheer joy of it, maybe. I want to encourage people to start to try it and to find what they really enjoy about it. So a huge thing that people have been talking about in recent years is just the happy feeling it gives you. So the mental health lift, and pretty much every swimmer will talk about that because it is a thing. You know, there's stories of people right across Scotland that have really benefited from that. So I think that's a really good way to start it. And I think as you do it more, then you maybe just you're happy doing that. You're happy just, you know, swimming short distances, just being in the water. But I think it can encourage you to become very adventurous, and then as a result of that, challenging yourself. And I think, you know, you're benefiting then from physically being active and getting out and doing things. You're physically, you know, you're seeing more of Scotland, you're challenging yourself, and you become a much more an adventurous person. I think it makes you a happier person. And I know lots of swimmers who were quite evangelical, almost like once you get into it, you're encouraging other people to do it, I think. As well as that, it's a really good community, so it's really pretty welcoming, and there's swim groups anywhere in Scotland, pretty much. There's going to be swim groups. There's probably quite a few groups here. People meet up, going for a swim, encouraging each other. Everyone's a beginner at some point, so it's amazing to see someone come for the first time, maybe be nervous, not be sure what they're doing, and within even just a couple of weeks, become really confident. And there's so many people, I think, still unsure about being in the water, and, you know, causes them worry and fear. But once you can get over that, you really do become much more confident in the water, and it makes you think about, what could I do next? Where could I go next?
And actually, the ladies that I just met here, there was one of them that's just gone in for the first time.
Brilliant.
I think she seems happy. And it's interesting you say that it can actually have a wider impact on your life and make you more adventurous. Do you mean in every sense, like not just in terms of going into water, but it might actually make you feel confident about doing other things?
I think so, yeah. Maybe it's something to do with, you know, cold water and the reaction that gets within you. But also it's somewhat overcoming the challenge. So often getting into cold water, getting into a loch, into the sea, can be the hardest bit. So once you become over that challenge, it's almost like it can set up the rest of your day really well. So you leave the water and, you know, you might have been worried about something going in, you might have had some issues that were going on in your head or some kind of problem you're trying to work out. You've often forgotten about it.
Dissolved.
Yeah, totally. And so you're left with that happier mindset for the rest of the day. So I think that can really help you. You have to be brave to get into the water. So I think proving that bravery to yourself can definitely encourage your day, and then as a result of that, keep doing it a lot, it makes you worry less about things.
There is more research being done now about the benefits of cold water swimming. Are you across that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I follow it quite a lot. I mean, it's really quite interesting because as the numbers of people doing it in recent years have gone up, so has the research and what we're learning more about the effect it has on the human body, you know, in the brain, but also physically, you know, the adaptations that take place within your body. But also there's much more research going on about the, you know, the safety aspects of it, because being in cold water although we're saying it's a great thing, you know, you've got to be safe about it and you've got to know how to do it and you've got to build up to it over time, the more and more you do it. Studies are showing that it can boost your mental health. I am not a scientist as such, so I really am interested in, you know, how it makes you feel and the benefits you can get from it. But I think it's brilliant that we are seeing all these studies and we are seeing people getting a deeper understanding of how it works.
An evidence-based
yeah.
kind of thing. But you mentioned the safety aspects as well, because it is true, and I know this from somebody that I know who actually did die going into cold water, so it can have extreme consequences for yeah. some people, and possibly you can't even predict that.
Yeah.
So what's your advice on that front?
I think it's a thing you've got to build up to over time, being in cold water, and you've got to really... No, you don't have to learn from, you know, mistakes, but once you make mistakes, you do learn a lot. But you don't have to make those mistakes in the first place. I guess that's the idea.
Have you made mistakes?
Yes, I have, yeah. Often getting in, the first 90 seconds can be really tricky, and that's when people get that panic and that shortness of breath, particularly if they're plunging straight into cold water, into deep water. I've never had that, luckily, so I'd really try and encourage people to take the first couple of minutes getting in slow. What I've had, you know, problems and issues with is maybe being in too long, and then once I've got out, being too cold, because you're still getting cold once you get out. So it's the recovery process after a swim is just as important as when you're in the water.
Right.
So yeah, being in too cold during winter and then getting out, and for example, I've been in a situation where I've had to drive too soon after, so I'm really shivering, my body's getting colder still, and you're putting yourself in really dangerous situations driving a car, for example, doing that. So I think that has been some of the times when I've had, you know, slightly dangerous situations. I've never crashed a car, but...
You thought, gosh, I was pushing it there.
Yes, big style. Yeah, so that was probably about 7-8 years ago. I drove a car and then realised afterwards, wow, that was, you know, quite dangerous. So, you know, from that, I try and tell people to get that recovery process really, you know, sorted.
So what would you say then? Make sure you've stopped the shivers before you go in the vehicle.
Yeah, for sure. I think take your time. So whenever you go for a swim, especially if it's going to be cold, plan for the recovery time afterwards. So plan to make sure you're going to be okay before you, you know, head off, before you take charge of any vehicle, before you, you know, do something that requires a bit of responsibility. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, getting out, getting warm and dry really quickly, getting loads of layers on, having something to eat, moving around. I really like if I'm cold. But there are, of course, aspects, you know, people who have maybe heart conditions, it can be trickier for them and they might not know until they go in. So, you know, that's something you've got to be aware of. And especially, you know, swimming with other people can be really beneficial in that way because you've got someone to keep an eye on you. And then there's all sorts of medical conditions that are specifically related to cold water that, you know, not a lot of people would not realise about initially. But these things you learn over time. So a lot of it is just gaining experience and slowly pushing your boundaries, not taking on too much too soon.
Yeah, so don't just suddenly decide in the middle of winter that you're going to jump into a cold sea or something, which actually people do because of these challenges, don't they? Maybe that's not the best way to go about it.
I don't think so. I think once you build up cold water tolerance, it is possible to go and do these things, but I wouldn't recommend it, that's for sure. I mean, in winter, it's not the best time to start because it's so cold. I mean, right now is the best time to start outdoor swimming because the water's all right. It's still going to get slightly warmer in Scotland, actually. As it changes temperature, you're already used to it. So you're used to the kind of process and how your body feels and you get acclimatised over time. Yeah, I mean, cold water immersion has become really popular over the last couple of years. Very similar to swimming, but I think a lot of people who do that, it's all just about being in the water and maybe they're not even actually swimming at all. So I think the two things are very closely connected in terms of safety things. But I'm really interested in, you know, getting people out and maybe actually swimming, you know, around a headland, seeing what's around the corner, having a look, exploring somewhere new, quite literally getting a new, you know, view on a place by being out in the water.
So it's actually more about exploring the landscape.
A lot of that is, I am really interested in that. I think I get very bored swimming at the same place maybe all the time. Yeah. And although I really like, you know, when I'm in a city going to a Lido and having a swim there, I couldn't do that all the time. You know, for me, a lot of the joy of it is, you know, seeing beautiful places, exploring little nooks and crannies, places that I think, looking at a map, that could be quite a nice place to go swimming. So, yeah, a lot of the interest for me is being in a place that really inspires me and makes me feel really cool and makes me feel, like, a bit wowed by it. That's what I really like.
We're sitting here on the edge of a loch. Mm. There are many different places that you can swim. You've got the sea, lochs, rivers. Do you have any particular favourites?
I don't know. I think it changes. I really like rivers with clear water, which is sometimes hard to find in Scotland unless it's summer. I really like that, you know, finding a river pool where you can dive in and go for a swim. I don't think I do quite have a preference, because each one has its own unique thing. For example, here, you've got a beautiful landscape around you, but the water's quite dark, so you don't see much once your face is in the water if you're doing front crawl. But if you're at like a beach, you know, you can almost be snorkeling whilst you're swimming just about. Just because of where I live, I'm kind of a bit landlocked.
Yeah,
so it's not the sea right now. But I do miss the sea living there, because I'm like an hour and a half drive from the sea, so I'm like, ugh.
And is under the water of great appeal to you as well? Are you looking and seeing what you can find?
Yeah, particularly in the sea, I think it's more interesting for that. I've not seen so much wildlife in the lochs underwater. Often they're quite peaty in Scotland, but I have found stuff. I found like an ice axe up in the Cairngorms, which must have slid across the loch when it was frozen and then fallen in. Particularly around the sea, so around coastal areas where there's seagrass growing and you can find crabs. And yeah, I was swimming near Applecross a couple of years ago and I found like a little crab, so I was like making a little film with him. A lot of being in cold water or being in water really kind of makes me feel like quite creative, so it inspires me to make films or to take photos or something. So I try to do quite a lot of that as well, whether it's just carrying a small camera with me so I can actually swim, or sometimes taking a bigger camera in specifically to get photos of, you know, some of the wildlife underwater. I've not seen enough fish in Scotland. That's the one thing I think. Maybe if you're a diver you get to see a bit more, but I'd like to see more fish actually. You know, compare it to like Australia. If you go snorkeling, yeah. It's very easy some places to go and see lots of colour and fish. I think in Scotland you have to go diving really to see most
deep,
of the stuff.
Yeah, down deep. You're also a Gaelic speaker as well. The Gaelic culture comes from the whole different world and represents landscape in different ways from perhaps the Scots way in Scotland. Is there a tradition of relating to water within the Gaeltacht?
Yes. But I don't know if swimming is so much, actually. It's interesting. I was trying to find some, like, there's, like, an online digital archive of old, you know, recordings and sayings and things, and I've tried to find if there's anything connected to swimming. Often out in the islands, for example, the Western Isles, people wouldn't swim, so there's often quite a lot of death from boats and things like that. But there's lots of folklore and tales and things attached to water. For example, here in Perthshire, you've got, near Loch Tay, you've got lots of streams where Uruksks would have lived. They're kind of half goat, half human creatures, so there's loads of folklore attached to that, and you know, Gaelic rhymes connect to the names of these things, and there's all sorts of folklore connected with crossing water as well and things like that. And so if you swim at a place where three waters meet, I'm not sure if I've done, I was trying to think the other day, apparently yeah, there's healing water there. There's various places in Skye, for example, I can think of one where the water is considered to be healing water, and there's all sorts of healing wells and things connected to the folklore. Yeah, so there's loads of that, and I'm really interested in that and finding out more about it. I've got all sorts of ideas to make like a series of films on something, but I always get distracted and end up doing something else.
Yeah. Brings to mind the Tours of Ben Ann.
Okay.
Have you been up there?
I've not actually.
So that's above Tormentel, and then there's amazing tours, and there's these little pools within the rocks, and apparently it was said that women used to be taken up there when they were pregnant to bathe in the water so that they would have a good birth.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
That's a cool place to go.
Okay, have you swum there yourself?
Yeah, it's not really like swimming, it's more like just putting yourself in them. It's not really much of
I mean, that's sometimes half the fun of it, just being in the water somewhere.
Yeah, that's it, and that's interesting. You know, you talk about the healing waters, actually, it's, by all accounts, that is what it is, fundamentally, isn't it, doing this?
Yeah, I think so, and I think however you speak about it, that's a lot of what people get from it. You know, they might not consider it or talk about it in that way, whether it's something deep or whether it's something you get a good feeling, whether you've, you know, achieve a challenge of swimming around an island. People get different things out of it, but I think it really does benefit you more than anything else.
In terms of advice then, so what would you say to people, for example, this particular bit of water, you know, somebody's thinking, right, my first time.
Yeah.
Well, how would you coach them?
If you turned up here and didn't know it, a good thing would be to think about, does the water drop away very quickly or gently? You wouldn't know. So to really just walk in slowly, If you've got goggles on, that can be very handy because you can then look in the water. Some lochs, you know, they drop in very nicely and then suddenly there's a shelf and you can find yourself in deep water quickly. So just take your time getting in. Wear something on your feet, particularly here it's very stony, so it's actually hard to walk in. And because it's a kind of popular camping spot, fishing spot, there could be sharp things in the water, you never know. So really wear something on your feet, whether it's flip-flops or neoprene socks or even a pair of trainers or something. You don't have to go into very deep water to swim. You could even, you know, go out and then as soon as it's deep enough to actually swim, you can go up and down the coast, which is also easier for, if you've got someone on shore keeping an eye on you. You know, they can see you much more clearly. It makes them less worried if you disappear around the corner exploring somewhere. A lot of people use a tow float these days.
Yes, I noticed the ladies have
Yeah. I use a tow float, but I also use sometimes this big bag, big giant orange bag, rucksack, which is basically a giant tow float. And, yeah, that makes you really visible. Yeah. Then to people on the shore, to the ducks.
Yeah, the duck who obviously is used to being fed.
Yeah, it especially makes you visible to any watercraft. So here there's no jet skis or boats really. You get canoes and kayaks and stand-up paddleboards. So having that makes you really visible, which is the main thing for it. But it also gives you a slight bit of reassurance. You can hold on to it and float. But you shouldn't be kind of relied on to float, but you can do that if you need to as well, just to give yourself a bit more peace of mind.
You're an open water swimmer as well as an outdoor swimmer, aren't you? So you're hardcore. So I'm suddenly feeling slightly nervous about this
because
I just like going into the water and swimming around a little bit and then coming out.
Yeah, that's all right.
What is the difference between open water swimming and, say, just going for a dip?
I do both things all the time. So a lot of the time I'll be out for a run, just go for a wee dip at the end of it. And then sometimes I'll actively go out to do a long distance swim.
What kind of distances?
Between 2 and 5 kilometres. I'd like to build up to kind of regular longer distances. I don't do huge distances very often. I think it's, you know, setting the goal before you go is almost the difference. So you decide, I'm just going to go for a wee gentle, easy swim. I'm just going to enjoy the place. I think going for an open water swim, I don't know where the line is. You know, yeah. I don't know where you suddenly become from having a swim to going for an open water swim. But the good thing about a long distance swim is at the end you can always just take it easy. If you're wearing a wetsuit, strip off, have 5 minutes in the water just soaking in the place, because sometimes if the distance or the kind of swim across to that point there, if that's the goal, you can sometimes get a bit too focused in that and enjoy the place you're in, especially, which if that's the case you could almost be swimming anywhere, so you've got to really,
yeah, you may as well be in a pool in
yeah. Exactly. Maybe not a pool, I think you've got to enjoy the place you're in.
Do you change your technique then? Because I see now that there's more and more classes and coaching available for people who are into triathlon and so on. Is the technique quite different if you're doing something like that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, you can do a long distance swim in any stroke you like, so you don't have to do front crawl. You can keep your head out of the water and do breaststroke. Some people do 15 kilometres butterfly and mad things like
wow.
that. Yeah. So, your technique changes today. I mean, if you're a good pool swimmer today, it's not going to make a huge difference because there's no waves or anything. But the things you've got to consider are, waves, current. For example, your breathing. People, maybe you're a pool swimmer, you only breathe to one side if you're doing front crawl. So learning to breathe to both sides is a really handy thing for outdoors, particularly if you're swimming in the sea and the waves are coming from one side. Learning to, you know, change your stroke. Learning to sight is a good thing. So that's literally just choosing somewhere to swim to. And if you're doing front crawl, for example, it's looking up every so often as you do your front crawl. Maybe you pick the highest tree. Maybe that's your point you're swimming towards to keep you in a straight line. But if you like doing breaststroke, you know, your head is up all the time, so you don't have to take so many other things into account. If you can swim well in a pool, you can definitely change to swimming outdoors, but there's lots of extra things to consider.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was currents and tides and so on, because I have had an experience off Lewis where suddenly I found myself being pulled out.
Yeah.
And it was really frightening.
Yeah.
And then you feel your heart going and the breathing thing. What would you do in a situation like that?
A good thing is to try and find out beforehand, if you can, what a beach or what a coastline is like. Often by asking other local swimmers, you know, where's good to swim, or can I swim at this beach? And they'll often tell you, you know, there's the danger of a strong current at times. I'd also look at the tide times. Ideally, always swimming on an incoming tide. I mean, it depends where you are, though, because that can still cause, you know, strong currents. A key thing is to always stay relaxed, or if you realise you're getting into trouble, have a look around and see the best way you could potentially get out. If you're swimming to a beach and suddenly you find you can't get back, so whether you actually have to swim along the shore, which is, if you're in a rip current, for example, which what you'd have to do, so it's at like a surf beach, often where the water looks calmest is where there's a rip, so the water's pulling out to sea, and if you get caught in it, you could panic and think, oh no, I'm going far out to sea, but you almost change to swim along the beach, and eventually you'll come out to the rip and you can swim back towards shore. You might have to swim through a bit choppier water, you know, through the surf to get back to shore, but that can be a way of doing it. I've swum at Broughty Ferry Beach a few times, and that's quite good fun because it's basically between the river and the sea, so depending on the tide, you can go in and swim against the tide for quite a while, against the current, and then stop and then relax and kind of float back down with it. So yeah, it's almost maybe planning it beforehand, so you can maybe swim against the tide, swim against the current, and then let it pull you back to the start if you're in a situation like that.
And I think breathing is central to that, isn't it? It's just actually trying to control your breath.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. A lot of people do breathing exercises before getting in cold water, and it really does help for cold water immersion, you know, actually just preparing your body for it. Controlling your breathing whilst you're swimming is quite important, and a lot of that is just staying relaxed, you know, staying focused. If you have to stop and take a break, just do that. If you're not a confident swimmer, that's part of not going out into really deep water then, because then if you're close to shallow water, you can swim back, take a moment, even standing in the water to get your breath back. Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it too.
But that's an interesting one as well when it comes to rivers. I have experienced that sometimes you'll be floating or swimming gently down a river and you hit a rapid.
Yeah.
And you try and fight it, and once again, through experience, you realise, go with the flow.
Just
go with it.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Sometimes you can't avoid it. You can't go around, so you have to just go with it until there's maybe an eddy or something. I think if you're swimming down a river, a good little tip is to swim with your feet first, so defensively swim. So you pop your feet in front of you, you're almost lying back in the river. So it's your feet, and if you sit up, your bum's going to go lower in the water too. But it's your feet and your bum that are going to meet any stones or shallower water first, which is much safer than your head meeting them first. And also, you've got a view, keep your arms out to the side, you can kind of scull to the side a wee bit. So that's a handy tip for, especially when it gets shallower water.
Yes.
You don't drag your knees along the ground.
It happens at this time of year. In the summertime, it can be very shallow.
And it can change within days here. I swim in the River Tay, and I was swimming, you know, a wee bit near Aberfeldy, and I swam down between two bridges, and it was great, no problem. And then 2 days later, I swam down, and I was swimming on my back, so I had my feet first, and I bounced off. I still, and it was fine.
Yeah.
But I was like, wow, I even noticed the water difference within a couple of days, because there was no rain, and because there's no more snow melt coming into the water, so it's just slowly dropping down. So yeah, even keeping an eye on river levels on like online, there's lots of places you can check. It's quite good to almost set yourself a wee benchmark of like, oh yeah, I can swim that route at that height, and then if it's lower, you know, it might be a wee bit bumpy.
And then you end up with bruises all over your legs.
Yeah, so I mean, that's learning through experience, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, but sometimes you forget. Yeah. I don't know how many times we have to make the same mistakes.
It is true, yeah. Like, sometimes you'll forget something was quite tricky about a place, and then you'll go back next summer, oh, this looks like a good place to swim, and then you'll realise it's very shallow. You know, oh yes, now I remember.
I know that you do the hardcore end of it in the wintertime. Mm. You like a bit of ice swimming.
Yeah.
Is that without wetsuits?
Yeah, usually. I think it's almost like a different thing to summer swimming, though. So the distances are a lot shorter. Less about doing distances, more about being in the water. You can do it in different ways. You can just do very kind of short, maybe back and forwards, or you can set yourself longer challenges. In winter, you can wear a wetsuit, and it definitely keeps you warmer. But then the faff of getting changed, you're spending longer getting colder as you're getting changed almost. You don't quite feel it in the same way. I think you don't feel the cold in the same way, which I really quite like. I like that challenge. I like the slight difficulty of it, which is quite different to summer swimming in a way. It's not for everyone, that's for sure. There's competitions all around the world now, but Scotland, they've got like a winter swimming championships now where people go and compete. Distances are pretty short between like, I think 50 metres is the shortest and 450 is the longest.
Is that a speed cut?
Well, actually, there's races which are based on speed, and then there's races which are based on like the fanciest hat things like that.
Okay, so a bit fun.
Yeah, so it's not totally serious. So like, if you're a serious swimmer, you can go and take part, you know, and
And where does that fast. Happen?
So that's at Loch Tay.
Okay.
It's in the loch itself, but you're swimming in a kind of marina area. In the loch, but in a kind of controlled pool area, almost. I think today's like an ideal day to go for a swim.
Yeah.
So it's slightly warm in the air now. It's cleared. There's no more rain or wind.
Well, do you want to get ready to go in then?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Cool. So you wear a swimming cap?
I do, yeah.
How come?
I just find it gives my head warmer if I want to actually put my head in the water at all. Yeah.
Okay.
And I actually often wear a neoprene cap underneath it. I don't always put my head in, but if I'm gonna, I just wear a cap just because I'm gonna get a cold.
Fair enough. Head. Okay. Right.
Cool.
Shall we go for it?
Yeah. I hope your mic can still pick us up. We might have to go out some distance.
Yeah, that's fine. And so off we went for a very gentle swim where we encountered a couple of swans and just enjoyed the sensation of being in the loch and our surroundings. Callum McLean's book 1001 Outdoor Swimming Tips is out now. Please do get in touch and tell us where you listen to this podcast. We love hearing from you. Email outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. I'm Helen Needham. Thanks for listening. That was so relaxing.
It was good, yeah.
Yeah, so nice.
It wasn't warm, but it definitely wasn't cold.
It definitely
but
wasn't cold.
Getting towards warm, actually, yeah.
Yeah, just being part of that, the environment, being within it, is really special, isn't it?
Yeah, and I really like it here because there's a road nearby, but it's actually really quiet as well. So once you're in the water, you're totally taking in what's around you.
You pointed out that you just love to look at the water in front of you and the way that it shimmers.
And and you actually, like, when you're down at water level, it looks pretty different to how it does right here.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really it's pretty amazing, actually. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
That's all right.
Thank you for taking me out.
Thank
it's
you.
Been fantastic.
And hopefully there's thousands of more swimmers coming into it this year.
Yeah, hope so.